Hey everybody, welcome to Service Level, curious conversations about the Black and queer experience. I'm one of your hosts, Damon, and today, Jordan, Tony, and I are discussing how physical appearance serves as currency among queer men. Why is physical appearance a high priority within the queer community? In the social media age, what responsibility do individuals have when curating the perfect persona? This is Bad Bitches Only.
Ooh, what a title.
Well, so, you know, we're saying we're bad. We're those girls.
I don't have to say it, baby.
Because it's already understood.
That part.
Got it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So this is our first episode of my little part of the season, the Fire series.
Sizzling.
Right. Yeah. So welcome to the Fire series. And I mean, who doesn't like it a little hot?
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm going to have to get my hose out.
Hello.
Cool you off.
Okay.
Heated.
It's a little bit too hot, though.
Oh, please.
I came in here sweating today. I had to do outfit change.
Yes, but no, for this part of our series, we're going to talk a little sex, a little conflict management. But first, we'll start with a little hot button topic, pretty privilege, and how that affects queer culture.
Yikes.
So we're going to have someone join us today, and Tony will introduce our fun guest for this.
Yes.
Episode.
So today, we have a special guest with us to help us broach what I'm sure will be a polarizing topic for the children. I can't wait to see how social media reacts to this. He's an LGBTQ plus advocate, a content creator who has been on a personal journey of his own that led him to launching a YouTube series in 2021 called It's Just Not Adding Up, because the math ain't mathing. His intention wasn't to create a brand, but to have outwardly conversations that would allow folks in our community to feel seen and less alone, which is very aligned with what we do here at Surface Level. And creating space is his mission, and we're excited to share this space with him as we dive deep on this topic. So let's go ahead and welcome Obio Jones to our Surface Level family.
Welcome.
Yay! I'm so excited to have
What's
you,
up, guys?
Atlanta's very own.
Come on, stop playing with it. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having
me. Good.
Yeah.
So the way that we start our show is always with a game. We want to get you a little warmed up and before we get into the conversation. So the game for this first episode is titled I Spit Hot Fire.
I Spit Hot Fire.
Oh, am I about to rap finally?
You are not.
Jacaris.
Oh, maybe.
That's what I'm saying.
So I'm going to give you options of some provocative music lyrics.
Okay.
And then you'll just say, which one you think was a little more fire?
Okay.
All right. So the first one, some of my favorites. Big Mama Thang by Lil' Kim.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be scared of Now I throw lips to the...
Wait, I didn't hear the lyrics. What was
I
the lyrics?
I used to be scared of the dick. Now I throw lips to the shit.
That's how I
Handle
remember
it. Right, like a real...
don't be bleeping anything.
Right, I was confused.
PBS.
Or do you think Trina's Look Back At It is more fire? I got an ass so big like the sun. Oh, big dick. What's the next one?
Got
my boy dick, I want to come. Slap it in my face.
Shove it down my throat.
All right.
Trina, that song makes me blush.
You like it slapped in the face.
Well, no, I didn't go into any specific bar. I just liked the song.
Well,
Trina.
Fortunately, we know you well enough to know.
So which, all of our listeners at this point.
Spoke to you.
Tony.
You know, it's Lil' Kim throwing lips to the shit, but like that Trina bar right there, it's like you can't, there's no way around that. There's no way around that. I gotta go with Trina on that one.
Yeah, I agree. Trina.
I'm going with Lil' Kim. Lil' Kim for me is like the story of a gay youth. It's just like, you used to be scared of
it. It's like, I mean, no lips to the shit.
Exactly. It's like, she's a storyteller.
She's a storyteller.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
All right.
A truth teller.
So next, Hoochie Mama by Uncle Luke and Two Live Crew. So Big Booty Hoes.
Mm.
Or EU ain't nothing wrong when you want to do the butt all night long. Tony,
You know what? Because they tried to, back in the day, they put a lot of raunchy shit in lyrics that you just would never catch until you got to a certain age. I'm gonna go with doing the butt because I like to do
the butt all night long
in the butt
all night long.
You know, it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's okay.
Obio,
I'm gonna go Big Booty Hoes.
Okay,
I'm gonna go that one. Yeah.
The multi-purpose.
I'm gonna go with Big Booty Hoes.
I was gonna go with Doing the Butt. I love that song. That's a great song.
It is.
All right.
And
all
I see the dance in my head.
Absolutely.
Okay, a little more recent. So from the same song, Gobble Me, Swallow Me, Drip Down Inside of Me, mm-hmm. Meg Thee Stallion, or I Want You to Touch That Little Dangly Thing That's Swinging the Back of My Throat.
Oh.
Jordan.
It's so tough. I mean, Meg slid on that song, so I'm going to have to go with Meg.
It was the entrance. It was like the first thing she said. I was just like,
I've arrived.
I'm here.
I'm accounted for.
Cardi tapped in on that second verse, but Meg came in.
Swinging.
Right.
Yeah, that was cute.
OBO?
I feel like whenever I hear the word throat, it just does something to my spirit. So I'm going to go with that part. I'm going to go with Cardi B.
Okay.
Right. I've dealt with a few throat goats in my day. However, I do, you know what? I'm not a throat goat. I have a gag reflex. Sorry. Oh. I prefer eating ass. you said this the fire episode, so I'm going to go with...
You should know coming from the head doctor.
The head doctor?
No, it's just a phaser line. I just felt like...
I'm going to go with Meg's line on that just because Gobble Me, Swallow Me, Drip Down the Side.
Okay. So we're going to take it old school a bit. So,
okay,
Miss Grace Jones, Pull Up to My Bumper Baby and Drive It in Between, or Miss Donna Summer, Simply Love to Love You, Baby. Jordan.
Love to Love You, Baby. Ciao. Any chance to sing?
You know what? I was blessed with this voice.
And
You're blessed. I agree with you, Tony.
We're going to talk about what you're blessed with, baby.
Me and Tony voice. Are on the same page.
OBO.
I also didn't know that was a sample. I don't know. I didn't know that Donna Summer to Beyonce thing was like a...
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that until right now. But I'm going to go with Grace Jones, though. Yeah.
Yeah, I you know, I love the vulgarness, so Grace Jones.
Grace Jones for me. You'd be like, what do you want to do? Grace Jones. I don't care what the question is.
Don't matter.
And then the final one, bringing it up to, you know, basically last weekend at Pride. My Gucci pink, my booty hole brown, sexy red, or the new girl on the scene. You thought I was feeling you? That nigga a munch. All the girls are thinking hard on this.
You know, I'm gonna go with Sexy Red. She holds it down for the people who wear prescription glasses out in public. And she be wearing prescription glasses on red carpets. I actually love it. It makes me feel like I need to
you
wear
feel
my
seen.
I do feel seen. Like I should not like wear my contacts all the time. Like I should put them prescription glasses on with my
glasses?
Thong
you
and poppy
nice
juice.
Why you got your thong on that poppy juice? Is that what I heard?
Why wouldn't I?
Oh, poppy juice. With your prescription.
Glasses on.
Yeah.
That's the look. Mm-hmm. But no, Sexy Red, I think. I mean, that song is so, like, it's an earworm. I can't get it out of my head. I played it 3 times on the way here, on the walk here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
We know where your mind is. No, I'm going to say I love Ice Spice. She gives me like a female version of Pop Smoke a little bit. Like her flow is just so infectious and you just want to hear it over and over. Like no matter where you hear it, when that comes on, it's like everybody is like, hey, like that's it. So I'm going to go with her.
Okay.
That was good. Now you gonna change my mind a little bit. I was gonna go with Sexy Red.
Did I influence you?
I know. Now I'm like, I've been like influenced. I'm gonna still go with Sexy Red just because that's my original thought. So I'm gonna go with Sexy Red.
I mean, I'm gonna go with Sexy Red too. I mean, the way she had the girls rocking that Pride.
Ooh, listen, everybody stopped what they did and was singing along.
All those black doctors and lawyers and everybody put their little degrees away. And
it made me so proud.
I like when people can make you do that.
Yeah.
My son need a new pappy.
I cannot. I refuse.
This is very true.
And OBO, our final question is just for you.
Uh-oh.
So we ask all of our guests, what are you curious about? It can be serious. It can be something light.
I'm always curious. As it relates to the community, I've been thinking a lot about what would be like homonormative at some point in life. You know what I mean? Like, we all have an idea like what heteronormative is, but I wonder like what homonormative would be at some point. Like, will it be, I don't know, I just always think about like what will be like in 10 years, 20 years, like that's gay. Like, and, like affirmatively gay, not like judgmental gay, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's gay. I'm just curious. So what's it?
Yes. I would love for homosexuality to be normalized a bit more.
I don't want to be normal.
You don't want to? Well, that's, no. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Listen, I don't want to be normal either, but I want my rights.
And yeah. I want my gay rights, and I want them now.
I want them now.
With Marsha P.
That's it.
All right, so shifting into our conversation for the day, we talk a lot about image and how people are perceived within the community, and particularly now thinking about the community online. Mm-hmm. So what would you say, or would you say you realized at some point you had some level of privilege in Black queer communities because of your physical appearance? Tony, do you want to start?
Yeah, so this topic is one that I've really wanted to talk about for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that we're finally doing it. And one of the things that I thought about is when it comes to privilege and pretty privilege, which is what we're going to be discussing today, is like it's the folks who benefit from it, who have the privilege, that are the ones that need to speak up about it. Mm-hmm. So we don't always do this. But I do want to level set here for the girls, because I do think that I want us to all be talking about the same thing. And I want the listeners to be on the same page when they're hearing us talk about this, so that everyone doesn't have their own idea and misinterpret anything. Mm. So pretty privilege actually works on the principle that people who are deemed more attractive based on accepted societal beauty standards have an upper hand in the world and are afforded many more opportunities than less attractive people don't actually get. So when you start there, I'm just like, okay, this is what pretty privilege is. Now, when did I realize I was a bad bitch? I think it had to be when I was in college. Like, when I first got to college, it was like Pandora's box for me. That was my first foray into like gay life and gay, mm-hmm. in the gay community. Mm-hmm. And so from upperclassmen hitting on me, I heard things like I was exotic. Facebook honesty box was around.
I knew Twink Tony. Like, y'all don't know Twink Tony. We gonna pull some photos out the archive.
Child. And I didn't know I was giving so much. But that it literally opened my eyes up to just the fact that, like, okay, there's something about you that is intriguing that people like. I think it's a little bit of that mystique too. And as a freshman in college, like, you're just new and raw, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So that was the beginning. And then I think when I got to New York City, now that after I've always been back and forth to New York City during college, but then when I actually moved here, there's a community that we call the Black queer community that is kind of one that is hard to infiltrate. But I noticed how people treated me a little bit differently than others, being more welcomed into certain circles. I had an easier time making friends. And that is one of the things that allowed me to see, like, oh, wait a minute, like, I'm getting a different level of treatment, and I have to understand and recognize why. Yeah. I didn't know where to place that in the beginning, but that was kind of like, okay, she's beautiful. You're beautiful. It's true.
We're gonna tap you out. Jordan.
I think similar to Tony, it was New York for me. I wasn't out in college, so I didn't really like venture out into the queer community as much. So New York was the first time for me, and I feel like I remember a very specific like interaction where it like clicked for me, and it was when it was like a group of like 6 or 8 Black gay guys were all going to a house party, and no one knew the host of the house party. You know those moments where it's just mm-hmm, like, yeah. This is the move tonight. Like, right, you get a text message and you show up, and then you just hope that your little bottle of Svetka is going to be good Ooh. Enough for all 8 people.
Well, that's how you know you was pretty, because Svetka.
I mean, we were 21. I know. Oh, okay.
No, it was the blue one for me. Sky vodka.
Drinking Svetka at 21.
Well, you were.
Anywho.
But So I was like, you know, in the group or whatever, and I was kind of like in the back of the group when they knocked on the door, because I'm like, if we get rejected, I'm not trying to be like, hi,
slink on out of here.
So I was just chilling in the back, and for me, it was just like a black and white situation. Like, we're either going to get into this house party or we're not. One of the people actually called me to the front and made me stand in front of the door because they felt like because if I was the first person that the person saw when they opened up the door, that we would have a stronger chance of getting into the party. Mm. And we did. And I felt like that was the first time where like I felt like it was super transactional. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like Apple Pay for the fucking group, where it was just like, just put Jordan in the front and then like, we should be fine and then we can get in. And then I felt like that was sort of when I recognized like, oh, this is like, people think of this as currency in some way.
That just brings back memories for me too. I had friends that would also be like, you're beat. Like, look at that guy. He wants you. Look at that. Go do. And I'm like, girl, if you want the guys, go get the guys. Stop weaponizing my beauty. See, my Tony secret for your greater good and your benefit. That's also something I didn't even think about till just now.
Yeah, that was what kind of like popped out for me. Like a transactional experience that I had.
Mm. OBO?
I don't have one, honestly. I don't have like a moment where it was a thing. I think I ran from aesthetics in all regard because of shame. You know what I mean? I didn't want to be looked at all because I felt like the more you look at me, the more you'll see me. And I didn't want to be seen, right? I was hiding. I came out of the closet at 26. And so I was in college. I was like, don't, you know, they made a little, I was with HBCU. They love a little list, like hot guys on campus vibes. And I would be on some of them, but I never like leaned into it because I'm like, again, now the girls are going to have sex and I'm not really giving that vibe. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, girl, it might work. It might not. We'll see what happens, you know? And so I just didn't really lean in. I think like even now, I see my comment section, so I know people find me attractive, but I think it hasn't been like this moment was when people thought I was so, you know what I'm saying? I had the opposite. I was ugly growing up, right? People used to call me African Booty Scratcher, ugly, all that kind of stuff. And I think that was kind of like interesting for me to like navigate because I always thought I was cute my entire life. Like I never, I remember
that's going, good. Your parents did well?
No, they didn't. Like my mom wasn't affirming, but I remember going home and being like, they're calling me ugly to my sister. They're calling me ugly at school, but I don't get it. Like, I think I'm really cute. Like I really did. Like I was kind of funny. I just thought I was so cute. I don't know. But yeah, I don't have like a definitive moment, but I do recognize I've seen other people, to your point, like come to the front or perks in general, right? I think I've seen it happen in real life.
Yeah. No, I would say that the thing that stood out, particularly being in New York, and is actually something that I found interesting that's connected not just to queer communities, but to Black communities, like being a more fair-skinned person, like you recognize when people treat you one way and then people treat people of darker skin a different way. And you reckon, like me and Jordan would hang out a lot when we were younger going out and just like, I can very tangibly see the interactions like you all have when like we enter a room versus other people. And it was something where I was just like, this, excuse me, it was something that it felt ugly, but felt like reminiscent of like growing up. Like it's something that you recognize as a Black person. And like even like one of the notes you just said about the names people called you, like you recognize that colorism piece of it. And it's something that unfortunately also impacts our community. And I would think that's something that I recognized really early in my life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, since we've all had like our own experiences with this, I want to know, why do we think that appearance is such a priority in the queer community? Do we think there could be a lack of self-esteem that's at fault for this or something else? Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, listen, everybody wants to be desired. I'd like to think. And if you say you don't want to be desired, I would have to interrogate that and be like, bitch, is you lying or is you like, what's the tea there? I mean, I've never heard someone say like, I don't want to be someone that someone else wants. Yeah. And that may be the case. I would love to have that conversation too. But being attractive means access, right? It means access at every level, from jobs to dating to sex to leisurely activities, friends, etc. And so I think having that access, and which also means power, is why being attractive is probably put at the forefront and a priority to people. And I think it's not just the queer community, but that's what we're talking about today. But I think it's the society at large, but specifically within the queer community, definitely. Like, looks is the one thing that no matter where you go, people are talking about it. We know that there are people who like to just sit back and critique everybody that walks through the door as a pastime, which is really stupid. But I think that it's not always been necessarily a lack of self-esteem. Well, that exists. I think it's a lack of curiosity that people have as to, you know, why they aren't questioning other aspects around what they deem attractive. Mm-hmm. Why is it just what you see at face value? And so it's like, for me, while somebody may be sickening, it's like, well, they're hot, but what else is going on? Right. That's how I look at it. Yeah. How about you, Damon?
You know, I've said this about a lot of things, but I think everything comes down to why you're kind of recognizing something about yourself. So, like, for instance, if you, physical appearance, like putting it on, getting dressed up, like, I like that shit. Like, rarely will you catch me running around in public, like, not
put together.
But that's something that brings joy to me. It was like the middle of the pandemic, and I just be in my house, but like, today, I'm putting it on. Like Little Richard said in that interview, I'ma put it on. And like, and what I say all that to say that if what you look like and how you feel about yourself is so tied to like what others view and how others are receiving it, then like that's when it becomes this like more toxic thing to me. Like I think that there's nothing wrong with me. Like, you know what? I'm beautiful. I want to like make sure I look my best. I want to make sure I feel my best. Cool. Mm-hmm. But I think when you like buy into what that does for the interactions with you and other people, I think that's when it becomes something negative. And I think that's like two separate things. Like I don't mm-hmm. want, like, I want to make sure that like there's nuance in the discussion and just acknowledging that everything about your natural beauty or wanting to enhance that beauty or wanting to highlight it isn't purely tied to maybe low self-esteem or to what other people think about you. Sometimes it's just like me in my mirror, you as a kid in your mirror being like, you know what, girl? Yes. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Where I think it gets negative is the minute you walk out of the door, the minute you start to interact on social, the minute you start to include the thoughts and opinions of other people, then you are bought now into a system that isn't helpful to anybody.
Yeah. Well, how many times have I know so many people that are like, I can't go outside or I can't go to that thing because I don't have a haircut. Hair is a week fresh from the barbershop, but they need to have that haircut
right now
in order to be able to step foot into a crowd that is Black and queer. And that to me is like, you are putting yourself in a box that is, I just think it's so unfortunate.
Right.
I'm like, wow, this is how people move about the world. And it's a real thing. And it's based on how others will perceive them. Always wanting to look perfect. And that is just not something that's realistic. Hopefully over time, folks like that just kind of, they come around to the fact that, oh, that was some stupid shit. That was some young shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that we got to do better. We got to do better.
I mean, Obia, what do you think, you know, is the reason why physical appearance is so important
within the community?
Yeah.
To your point earlier, I think it's a big deal in society at large. But I think, if I'm being honest, I think all we had for a very long time was physicality, right? Like marriage was legalized in my lifetime. So people in the 70s, what were they doing? The goal wasn't marriage. The goal wasn't like raising my children. The goal was physicality, I think. And so I think that's been passed down from generation to generation. When I think about what it means to be queer as a young boy, it was sex appeal, right? Like I didn't have the opportunity to go on dates. It wasn't like this, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't like this affirming language. There wasn't this environment to really explore people and stuff. Like because of that, a lot of people kind of just led with physicality. Like, right, like, am I attracted to you? Because we're probably going to have sex and possibly hang a little bit in private. That's probably going to be the fullness of this interaction. There is no room for full relationship, marriage, kids. And so I think the society is all pretty fixated on looks. But I think for heterosexual people, there's this like other scope, right? Like, is she bad? Cool. But after that, is she going to be a good mother, a good wife, a good this? Where a lot of gay guys, I don't think we think about like, are you going to be a good husband? Are you going to be a good father? Are you going to, like, it feels so far-fetched. Even now. So imagine that in the 80s. And so for us to have that like language trickle down, it feels almost like, what am I expecting people in the 70s on the height of the HIV/AIDS epidemic? Do I really think you were fixated on what kind of person they were or having a really enjoyable time? Like, you know what I'm saying? Even when it was a mental illness, like, I want to have a good time, bro. Like, I'm not really fixated on what kind of person you are. So I think a lot of our mentors were wiped out. And I think so we have people who are just navigating shame and just kind of are looking for like, what can I have an instant gratification experience from? And that feels like aesthetics. And so I think now we're seeing people kind of say, I want more. So I see it shifting a little bit. But I think to answer the question, a big byproduct of that is because of how gay has been treated for so long. There wasn't a lot of room for, in my opinion, much else. Like, even as a DL person, right? Like, I didn't really care about your character. Like, that was very far-fetched for me. It was like, I want to hide. Is Tony going to be good to hide? Nah, he look too gay. Are you going to be good to hide? You got hair. Are you going to be, you do too, you know what I'm saying? Like, it really wasn't about the bigger thing. And so I think now, because again, it's been passed down for generations, we're now figuring out, oh, wait a minute, like, we can actually do more than have sex. We can do more than, like, just hang out. We can actually build something. So now, to your point, it's not about how you look. It's like, who are you? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But for so long, it wasn't.
Yeah. I think that that's interesting because I think that it actually, in my mind, it goes back to the self-esteem part of the question that was posed originally. And this is not to be judgmental of the queer community. I think that we've dealt with a lot. And I think that we have to first look at what the beauty standard is in this country. It's white, it's thin, it's young, it's cisgendered, and it's able-bodied. And I think the further you are away from that beauty standard, the less you feel seen, the less you feel visible. And what does that do to a child that's growing up and trying to understand their value and understand their worth and build their self-esteem, right? At a very young age, the further you are from that beauty standard, the more toxic of a relationship you may have with the concept of pretty privilege or beauty or the politics of beauty. And so I feel like we have to take that into consideration when we look at marginalized communities like the queer community. We have to look at that with marginalized communities like the Black community. And we have to talk about like colorism being a part of beauty standards. And I think that, yeah, like people, to your point, Tony, everybody wants to be loved, right? Everybody wants to be desired. And when you're constantly being told by media that what you are is not the standard of beauty, you're not being affirmed by your parents at home, you're not being affirmed by adults outside of your household, like, I think you start to overcompensate and you try to just say, look at me, you know, like, let me get a six pack. Look at me. Like, let me do this so that I can stand out and I can walk in a room and I can feel validated. I can feel celebrated. And I think that that could be part of the reason that, you know, leads to those type of things.
Yeah. What you're talking about specifically with the colorism and at a very young age and where it all starts reminds me of the Gordon Parks photography when they did that experiment with the babies. They held up the dolls and a white doll and a Black doll. And the white doll is what the Black child was looking at as like, good. You know, good. And and that is, it all starts from such a young age. And then it's that learned behavior, kind of like what Obio is talking about. We've learned these things and we pass these things down. So now it's the unlearning. And now it's like Pandora's box, really figuring out like, oh, wait, I get to be whoever the fuck I want to be. And I get to be beautiful however the fuck I look. And starting to and knowing and understanding that that does really start from within. And you've got to affirm yourself because for so long, you know, you may not have had parents who affirmed you. You might have thought you was cute as pie.
Exactly. And recommended reading, The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, talks about sort of like the idea of beauty standards and what that does to children in terms of how they view themselves and how they grow their self-esteem over time. The next question, and Obio, you kind of talked about this a little bit when you mentioned the comments in your Instagram, but do we believe that our physical appearance has helped bolster the success of our respective platforms on social media? And if so, how do we think that we could be advocates for changing a system that we benefit from? So this is a big question.
I see you taking a sip over there.
Let's start with you, Damon.
Okay. So as the person that has a lot of our creative work ahead of the season, abso-fucking-lutely.
Yes, you think that physical appearance has
like,
helped surface level.
I think that like when people and obviously we do great quality work, like creative work. We work with some amazing photographers and interesting people. But it's not. I wouldn't be blind to say that like we realize we put our face on everything for a reason. We recognize that people react to it. I recognize that we put a picture of Jordan up, it gets more interaction than anything we do.
I was not going to say that. It was us. I said it was in my notes, it's just Jordan.
We have saved the world, cured the world of homophobia. And then we could put a picture up with Jordan after, and that would get more engagement. And I don't even mean that as a slight to him. I think there have been times Jordan's saying amazing things on the show, and then like we'll get a comment like, oh my God, that's so nice that you're talking about saving the world, but look at those arms. And I'd be like, okay, sure.
That's why I covered up my arms.
Yeah, but there is...
We can see a nipple show. Like
within the privilege, there are levels to the privilege.
Right.
There are people who, like a Jordan, like an OBO, that are taller, that are more muscular, but also have a beautiful face, an eye color. Like, all of these things feed into, like, the levels of the privilege. And it's very apparent, and it's not something that the people who are born with it can help. I remember asking Jordan one time, like, what does that feel like? Like, I know I'm sickening too, but like, girl.
Bitch, you know how I felt when I had those heels on at our live record and I was taller than this bitch? I said, well, this is different. That's what it looks like up here all the fucking time.
That's what it looks like.
What I would say also, like, the second part was just about, like, how can you fight that system from within? I would say that what we do on our show is more like hook and reel. Like, it's a lot of pretty pictures at first to kick off a season, but the topics, the care, what we put into it, we have a very hard rule about having all types of people on our show that we just find interesting, whose stories we think are important to tell, that represent all cross sections of our community. Whereas, like, I've seen other shows where it's just like, let me call all my hot friends who all have a bunch of followers and let's all talk about something together, which is kind of meaningless, but I know a lot of people will engage.
Yeah.
And I think we'll be like, I don't care if you... We've had people on our show that don't even have an Instagram. Just because it's just like, yo, this person's cool. They have an interesting story. So I think it's, okay, cool. We recognize y'all want to look at us, but how can we, like, do more with that? Like, how can we, like, flash the shiny thing in your face, but then get you to listen a little bit more and get you to learn a little bit more and get you to stay a little bit more curious? And I think our commitment to that is how we do both at the same time.
Yeah, no, I definitely have had people say, I love Surface Level. I love what y'all are doing. And it doesn't hurt that y'all are nice to look at. And that does play a role in success, whether it's this podcast, whether it's work, whether it's dating, whatever the case may be, getting into a club. And I know that I recognize that that has helped us in this journey, but I also think we can sort of be advocates for recognizing our privilege and knowing that this is something that we have, and flipping the conversation on its head. I think exactly what Damon was saying, like, using this platform, having the balls to actually talk about this and not give a fuck what people might say, is really important. And like I said at the top of the show, it's the people who are benefiting from the privilege and who have the privilege who are the ones that really need to speak up and acknowledge that and really be the ones that are in the forefront of whatever the topic is. So that's where my head is on that.
How about you, OBO?
I think I disagree with everything that's happening right now, which is amazing. So
in this space?
Yes, I think. Well, I'm going to tread lightly. I think, and it's touchy for me, though, because I think, one, I didn't consider me conventionally attractive until very recently, because I grew up in the South. I was darker skinned comparison to the people in my school system, right? It wasn't like a thing. And so I think pretty privilege is interesting because, and I think, again, I might be a little triggered because oftentimes the one critique I get from my work is that I only have a platform because of the way that I look, right? Mm. And I've done so many things, and it low-key feels like minimizing sometimes, where it's like, I don't know what else I can do. I'm not like, you know, in like a tank every day. I'm talking about meaningful things. I'm having meaningful conversations, but it still kind of goes down to like, this man is so fine. And I know you don't mean anything by it, not you guys, but people in general, but sometimes it feels like, and again, not like a pretty person who's complaining, but you know what I'm saying? It feels a little bit minimizing to say that like my platform wouldn't be what it was if it wasn't for the way that I looked. I think, and I also think on the opposite of that, what are we saying about other platforms who don't get asked these kinds of questions? Are they not pretty, right? There's so many people who have public platforms who are visual, who also garner attention, who may not fit under the conventional standards of beauty. And so I wonder, like, what are we then saying about what it means to attract somebody, right? Because I think energy doesn't lie. I think even being interesting looking doesn't lie. I think there's so many people, I think about like Oprah, who doesn't necessarily fit within the grand scope of what it means to be conventionally attractive, but was able to like have a really, really long lasting career. And so I think when it comes to looking a certain way, I don't know if it's on the people who benefit from pretty privilege to make a statement, maybe it is, but I think it's a little bit about, well, first of all, white supremacy plays a big part in this, in my opinion, because I think there's this idea of like professionalism that like has us all in a chokehold, which has nothing to do with being professional, in my opinion. There's also like a respectability that plays a part in this, and I'm gonna shut up soon, I promise. But there's like a lot of things at play that like I think contributes to this idea or this like clamoring for beauty. I think there's also like a little bit of a policing for people who fit in certain scopes, right? Like a person who's non-conventional looking in a jockstrap feels like empowerment, liberation, freedoms, a declaration of self. But a person with a conventional body in one feels like thirst trappy and you know the things and stuff. Like it becomes this really interesting space for like a light-skinned person to say, I like my softer hair. Can you say that? I don't know, right? Like a person who's conventionally beautiful, can you acknowledge that I like the way that I look, but I also have something to say? Kind of what you guys were hinting at earlier, right? Like, and for me, I've often felt like in the beginning that I had to choose, because I would talk about like HIV awareness or the trans community or anything I have on my show, and the comments like, boy, this man's so fine. And I'm like,
So, well, did you hear me? Well,
but I have a question though, because yeah. I think we don't always get to say, like, when people who have the privilege aren't always the one that notice that they have it. Like when you think about
fair
white privilege and what they have, you know, it's, we look at them when we talk about the racism conversation, we need them to be speaking up and use their privilege to our benefit.
Fair.
So that's how I'm thinking about this conversation.
But what does that sound like? Because on one hand, it's like, I sound like if I always bring it up, it's like, boy, you ain't that cute now. Bring it
it's
down.
Not, will you
like, all right, girl.
Will you acknowledge that because of how you look, that has helped your platform grow? It's amplified it.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, I think two things can be true at the same time. I think that certain privileges that we have, being male, being traditionally, or like whatever, all the criteria, Jordan, whoever's closest to that, yeah. Those criteria he gave, like, that helps. Mm-hmm. I also think it helps to do the work. I think both of those things can be true at the same time. Additionally, I think that, though, when we talk about, I don't know if we want to call it show business or just like public platforms, industry, et cetera.
The media industry.
Yeah, I think that if we're in a space where you can name the people who fall outside of the traditional lens or the traditional scope, and we can name the people that it's just like, oh yeah, but this person is doing a thing. Well, if you can name them, I guarantee you couldn't run a list of every single tall, thin, attractive.
Well, that was my like comment as well, is that, like, let's look at what we do. Like, we're content creators, right? And we have these platforms.
Oh,
we
God,
are
am
part
I content
of the
creator?
You are a content creator. You are a digital content ma'am. Creator. I'm
like
sorry
it,
to
like it or not. Damon doesn't like titles, but
that's one of them. So
I'm
but,
sorry.
You
sorry,
know,
Mitchell
like this up. This is something that has existed before us, before our grandparents. Like, you look at the media industry. Anybody who has created a platform by being on screen that other people could consume from the beginning of the TV system, like tube, like your desirability and your closeness to beauty standards was very instrumental in your ability to be able to secure that platform, to get paid for that platform, to continue to go on it because you're attracting an audience. And so, I mean, do I think that we talk about important things on our show? Do I think that you talk about important things on your show? Yes. And I think it's our responsibility to do so, and that we're not squandering this opportunity and this privilege away. But I think that we can say that, you know, our platforms are successful because we're getting engagement that is focused primarily on how we look.
Mm. Yeah.
It may not be everybody. Some people are actually listening to the show and actually getting the value from it, which I love the listeners who are listening right now, because that's how I know. Mm-hmm. But the people who are looking at the clips that are 60 seconds on social media, it's a little bit, you know.
It helps with engagement.
It's a little bit different.
Yeah. It helps with engagement. But Jordan, you touched on something that we're going to get into here. You mentioned media. And I want to talk about and ask this question about, in the climate that we're in, when it comes to social media, is there some level of responsibility on individuals that we should have regarding how we present ourselves online and the perception of perfection that it creates, that creates? Do we think that there's a responsibility, or do we think that fuck these
look
folks?
Here's my thing with this. Do I think that we have a responsibility? Yes. To be authentic on social media, yes. But I think the bigger question is, what are these social media platforms doing to us that make us feel like we have to present this perfection? In preparing for this episode, I was actually looking at dating sites. And up until like 2020 or 2019, Tinder's algorithm was this thing called ELO algorithm, which meant that the more people swiped right on you versus the people that swipe left on you. So let's just say that you're a person that 90% of the time you get swiped right on. They would only show you, or they would primarily show you, other people who also got a lot of people to swipe right on them. And so it reinforces this idea that if I'm not beautiful, if I'm not close to the beauty standard, then I'm not going to even be seen. I'm not even going to have value. Like, think about the people on social media that feel like, you know, their engagement is suppressed because they're not
cute
or they're not pretty. And so what do? You open up these apps and they all have editing tools in them. You can put a filter over yourself and you can add a six pack to yourself.
Yeah,
and
you can, about that picture
you,
can, of you.
You can tuck in your waist if you want to with the little app in the app. And so I think the question more so is like, what type of environment are we trying to create for people online? And yes, I do think that us as individuals have a responsibility to make sure that we're pushing forward healthy, healthy interactions on these platforms, but these social media platforms have way more power and control over how we interact and how we see ourselves than an individual would, in my opinion.
Were you silent or were you silenced? Because here's my take on it, and it's very quick
when I think about it.
I think that when it comes to social media, yes, the content creator, there's some level of responsibility, especially if you're doing this type of stuff that we're doing. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's a level of responsibility on the consumer. Stop looking at all this shit online and just, like, your brain goes into a warp and it's just mush all of a sudden and you can't think about what you're consuming and allowing yourself to partake in as a consumer. I think it's on both sides. And so when I'm on social media, I'm curating the things I want to see and I'm questioning some of the things and I'm unfollowing things if I need to or blocking it out. Like, we have to be better consumers as well as for those of us who are creating the content.
Yeah.
Damon?
I have pretty much the same thing to say.
So shut down those curated hot Insta gay black Instagram pages where all you do is post cute people for engagement. But that's all I wanted to throw in there. OBL?
Yeah, I'm thinking in real time. I agree. I agree with everything that was said. I think it's a responsibility. I just wonder what that responsibility looks like. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think I also wonder, like, what do people do? I even think about the steps people who are, again, conventionally attractive take to be taken seriously. I think about women often, right, who dress very conservatively, whether they want to or not, because they want to be heard. They want to be taken seriously. I always say this, but in Little Mermaid, at the end, you guys seen Little Mermaid?
Of course.
Okay, cool. So at the end, her dad says, like, you shouldn't have to lose your voice to finally be heard, right? And I think about how often we have to lose our voices to finally be heard by people. Mm-hmm. And I think about, like, what it means for that privilege to then, like, work in tandem with helping other people benefit who don't benefit from that privilege. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it becomes this really interesting conversation for me about, like, what is our responsibility? What are you giving up? Because I think we all have to give up something in life, which is how life works. I think humanity is circular because what we give up, what we sacrifice, what we're mindful of.
Yeah.
And so even for me, I'm mindful of the fact that, like, I might get frontlined at a party. Am I bringing my friend with me, right? Or am I just saying bye? Like, you know.
Because we know those girls too.
Right. They exist, right? Or if it's like, even for me as a content creator who works with brands, I'm often given opportunities that are not for me. Like, hey, we want to talk about the feminine experience. That's not for me. And that's when I pivoted.
Yes.
But also when I pivot, I noticed that they get offered less money than me. Right? So they talk about what that looks like and all these things that people don't have or are not privy to these opportunities and what it means to then join in this, like, conventional race or this looks lottery. We all did nothing to look how we look in this room. None of us was, like, in the womb, like, hey, mom, listen, give me this color eye, give me this texture hair. We came out how we came out. You got lucky or unlucky in this regional looks lottery. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes, like, whether you got lucky or unlucky, you deserve a voice in this world. And, like, how do you then use your voice to help or use your voice to, like, just get out the way? Yeah, that makes any sense. But
so, like, my father said earlier in the season, he produced me.
We don't choose our children; we produce them.
Yeah.
But now I want to get into our final question here, and this is the bit of homework, and this is what we've been trying to do this season: to leave people with something to, after they listen to this, go back, do some homework, and, I don't know, be a better human being.
I don't know.
So how do we challenge the idea that attractiveness is the primary measure of a person's worth or value and instead promote something that's more holistic and inclusive and that kind of understanding of beauty? And before you girls go, I want to start here.
Oh, we got a 2-for-1 deal today.
Yeah, because I found this. I thought it was really, impactful.
Yeah.
So on dailyfreepress.com, it says that pretty privilege is probably something that will never undo itself in society, since it's all up to each individual person to respect people for who they are. Mm-hmm. We're all unintentionally kinder to a stranger based off of their front. But by understanding that looks can be a facade, that doesn't do one's personality justice. Every stranger can treat one another with courtesy and respect. Mm-hmm. Chow, I got chills because that's a bar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do we think?
They were spitting hot fire.
Is that spitting hot fire?
I think that I'm going to speak from the perspective of like having this platform, right? What can we do to dismantle that? And I think it's a build on Damon's response from earlier in the episode, is that we need to make sure that we're doing the work to make sure that the voices that we're amplifying here are looked at beyond what they can provide to us from a superficial standpoint. Understanding that social media is very looks driven, that doesn't mean that everybody who comes on this show needs to be like clickbait in terms of what they look like. Yeah. And I think that we've been doing this work, and it's something that we're very serious about, but making sure that the person has some level of intellect that can contribute to the conversation, that they are a kind person, that they're a talented person. There's people who, you know, that we've had an opportunity to maybe interview, and you know, they're qualified and they're credible and they have great things going for them. And then they're just a sucky person. And then we're just like, we can't give airtime to that.
Not on here.
We can't give airtime to that. And even if it is a short term, you know, gain in terms of audience growth or anything like that, that's not something that we can sacrifice. And luckily, we have the luxury of doing that as an independent podcast. We can make all of those creative decisions autonomously. But I think that we continue to make sure that we are amplifying the voices that have a real perspective and an interesting perspective that pushes the community forward in a more progressive direction. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we can do as a podcast platform.
Yeah. You know what, Jordan? I think that we've kind of touched on it throughout this whole conversation. And for me, it's 4 points. It's youth. We've talked about that. Media. We've talked about that. Leadership, holding leadership accountable, because sometimes they act a goddamn fool and show their ass, and we need to hold them accountable. And then community. Sometimes we're our own worst offenders within this community when it comes to having privilege or just some of the things and how we treat each other. So those are my things that I feel like we need to kind of just examine and make sure that we keep our foot on the next of those four pillars.
The system. Yeah. Let's fight the system.
No, I would just say that stop reducing people to one facet of who they are. And I think that that goes both ways. Like, don't take a person who you deem traditionally beautiful and just think of them only as that. And don't treat people who you don't believe that about as less than.
Yeah.
Because when I think we do that, you get much more interesting parts of who people are, period. And like, I think what this is about and what we are trying to do is, we say Service Level is always about community. And I think every part of the community has their own bag of shit, their own levels of privilege, their own whatever it may be. And when you learn the complexities and the more interesting things about those people, that makes for a much more interesting interaction.
Yeah.
That's good.
And LBO?
I feel like what you've been talking about for a little minute is like agency, like having your own personal agency to decide for yourself. And I resonate with that so much, because I think in the age of social media, people decide what your best attribute is. I'm going to decide that for you. Like, you don't get to decide it for yourself. So you could think that your eyes are, I'm telling you it's your body. You could think it's your mind, I'm telling you it's your feet. Like, you know, and I think if we... But I think if we gave people their agency back, right? You get to decide for yourself what your goodness is and what it looks like, feels like, and sounds like. And I think if we communicate a little bit more, I think to your point about social media, you're taking these like 30-second videos, these 20-second videos, and deciding who somebody is based on it. And it's unfair, right? Like, it's very hard. Even perfection is very hard. I'm cleaning my home. My home is cute right now, right? But like, yeah, I'm cleaning my home for 30 seconds. And you're deciding for me what perfection looks like. And so I think if we allow people more time, I used to think of my life as like a sitcom, but life is more like a movie. In the beginning, I hated you, but by the end, I loved you. I understood your experience. I understood your life more. So you had an attitude in the beginning, but I saw your dad was abusive and your friends were hateful. So I understood you more. So it gave you a little bit of a human that made me like you. And I think for all of us, we have things about us that are likable, right? That are like more than just what you saw in that 20 seconds on your explore page. And so I think all in all, giving people the agency back, communicating more, and like being more loving and stop projecting so much. Mm-hmm. Even for me, I have to check myself when I project on the other people. Like, because I always say, if somebody don't like you, you can say, hey, they ain't gonna like you. You know what I'm saying? Like, once I've decided that I don't like you for whatever reason, you can be like, hey, OBO, I love what you do. Performative. Like, you can say, like, you know, whatever it is, it's gonna through the filter of I don't like you, right? And so it's like, take my agency back and I'm who I am no matter what.
Yeah, it's like what Damon, I think, said earlier this season, like, I'm a person, not just vibes. So people gotta really, there's a lot to unpack. When you pull up the hood, guess what?
A lot in there.
The ugly truth.
Exactly.
So OBOB, really, thank you for coming.
Thank you, man.
All the way to New York from Atlanta.
Come on.
This is really, we feel the love. We're glad to have you here in the studio with us. The energy is just so much more palpable. And we hope that we helped you get closer to your mission of creating space. And so we would love to know at this point from you, where can all the people who looking at you, but also just want the information. When the people who want this, mm-hmm. where can they go find that from you?
Yeah, OBOOJones.com. You can find me there on all platforms at OBOOJones. I'm hoping that I become an author very soon. And so pick up that somewhere. I don't know if Amazon's going to do it or whoever. But, you know, just follow the things, man. I think my mission is to create space. And I'm wondering what that looks like for me and for other people. So, yeah.
Yes. Well, that is all the time we have this week. If you enjoyed this episode, let's keep the conversation going. And we know you will. Let us know your thoughts and questions at surfacelevelpodcast.com. And remember, stay curious.